It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know and that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it is time to break down the film with the man who does that over at JetsXFactor.com, Mr. Joe Blewett. This is X&O Quick Hits. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel.
Apparently, Johnny Cash has joined the show.
No, it's okay. The Nets won last night. They blew out the Warriors, so I'm completely fine. That's all that matters in my life. But no, you know, we've come to we're going through the stages of grief now. We talked before the recording this that now I'm looking into Wilson Fields, and after we record this podcast, I'll probably be getting into about 10 hours of Zach Wilson today. So I'm interested to get into some of that. Obviously, we're still holding out hope that the Jaguars can blow this, or win this against the Bears. But we are seeing some kind of rumors floating around right now that Adam Schefter just said that they're benching James Robinson. There's a potential of that happening this game, so that would really hurt their offense. But you never know. So two more games left. We'll figure out what's happened with the Jets and where they stand, and then obviously the head coaching search and all that's going to be kicked up into gear, so that should be interesting. Which is another new interesting development today is that apparently teams can start talking to head coaches today, even if they're on a team, which is interesting. So Gase should be fired hopefully by the time we're done recording this podcast, but we shall see. So
on that note, Joe, let's talk about what actually happened on the field with the Jets, and let's start with something positive that the Jets can build on. And that is the interior defensive line. Nathan Shepard looked pretty good in relief of Foley Fadakasi, who missed this game. John Franklin Myers continued to play pretty well. But I think we can agree that the star of all stars and the best player on this team all season, really, has been Quinnen Williams. And boy, was he dominant once again against a pretty good Rams interior offensive line until the point where he had to come out due to injury in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and against the Seahawks again, I know he didn't produce a ton, but he was pretty dominant in that game. So he's stringing along, four, five, six, seven dominant games in a row. And this was even to start a season where he was also dominant. Like, there were some games where it was a little bit less dominant, like the Bills and the Colts, but he had the Niners game tied in there and some other games tied in there, the Broncos game, so, like, he's been dominating this season. He's one of the best defensive tackles in the league, clearly. And again, once you surround him with maybe some more penetrating roles with some edge rushers to pinch the pocket and with a defense that can actually cover, like, he's going to produce even more. Like, this is the 10-plus sack guy at defensive tackle that we were hoping for. And guess what? He's only, 22 years old? I think he just turned 23. Like, he's still improving. So really, really excited for him. The technique, the power, the tightness of his elbow as well coming into blocks. The connecting of his hand and feet is ridiculous. I'm starting to see a lot more technique with his hands where the game is starting to slow down for him, where he's really manipulating blockers in way to obviously get to the quarterback and open up gaps for him. Like he was, again, great in this game, destroying run plays, obviously got the sack as well. Unfortunately, like you said, late third quarter, he gets kneed in the back of the head by one of his teammates, and he goes out. So hopefully he is okay. Obviously, and it seems like it is a concussion, him getting hit in the head and him throwing up on the sideline. I've had one as well, and that is a symptom that some people get, is they do vomit. So I feel bad for him. Hopefully he is okay. And obviously with the head, you, some you don't really want to screw around with. So listen, if you got to bench the guy for the last two games, to be super careful. I am fine with that. And I'm especially fine for that, for the tank, because if the, you know, and listen, Scott, like, we're all broken at this point, but if the Jaguars win and then the Jets respond by losing week 16 and then win week 17, and Q is one of those reasons, we will all be absolutely shattered. Like, I don't know what we will do. So Q sitting for the next 2 weeks for both his health and potentially ours, if the Jaguars do win this game on Sunday versus the Bears, then I think that's the smart thing to do.
Joe, let's move from the interior defensive line to the secondary. Bryce Hall had arguably his best game yet. An interception in here, did really well. Looks like he has a chance to, as you and I have talked about, be a number two cornerback, which is definitely good value with a fifth round pick. Javelin Guidry played pretty well here too. He's not a guy that's going to be a starter, but somebody that could stick as a depth piece. So some encouraging signs, although your friend Bless Austin was not one of those encouraging signs.
Yes, and sorry, I just want to really quickly just touch on the other defensive line guys. I know you said that. Shepard, good sack. He's twitchy. If you ask him to just go in a straight line and attack a guy, he can do it. So good sack for him. John Franklin Myers got a sack as well. So good game for both of those guys. They clearly struggled once, you know, Q went out in the run game. But to move on to the secondary, like I said, just wanted to touch on those guys and cover all my bases. But, Hall in that play, not a good decision by, you know, Jaren Goff. Like, he never saw Hall as a cloud corner in that cover two. And Hall made a really good interception. Obviously with one hand, you know, maintained proper distance from him to play the flat, but also kind of creeped up to get in position to potentially hit Goff if he kept rolling out, and obviously adjusted to the ball well. And when you say that, you know, the number two thing, I don't want people to think that's because of a lack of technique or, oh, he's bad and that's his ceiling. It's more because of the athleticism, and the athleticism is not top notch. And to be that number one guy in the league, you need to cover the guys who are freaks, you know, the Metcalfs, the Julio Jones of the world, you know, the Patrick Petersons and those guys can do that. The Jalen Ramseys and even, you know, Revis wasn't the best, you know, athlete. He's not comparable to Patrick Mahomes or Patrick Peterson, but he is a much better athlete than Bryce Hall. So that's why you say number two, just to clarify that. But listen, if you can get a really solid lockdown number two, which I think Hall could be, and I think he's developing into, and he will develop into, you know, obviously considering health, that's an awesome draft pick at, you know, the fifth round. That's an awesome draft pick at the end of the first round, if we're being honest, if you're hedging your bets. And if I could tell you, you know, the 31st pick in the NFL drafts me a lockdown number two corner for you, great. People are going to take that. So, really excited for Hall's future. Made a couple of good plays this game. You know, didn't get roasted by guys like Kupp and Woods out there. So that's a positive. He's been having some tough matchups, but again, even though he's been getting beat, he's been doing some good things with his technique overall that have been impressive to me. Guidry, again, is not getting picked on a ton, which is a positive. Undrafted guy who's not standing out in a bad way, making some plays in the run game, is having some tight coverage, which I am encouraged by. So him as a backup slot next year is, again, an undrafted guy to be your backup slot is a huge positive, you know? And again, I don't want people to get not attached to him, but I don't want people to overrate him, just like they did Bless Austin last year, where, oh, he's making some plays, now he's in for a starting slot corner. Like, let's be a little bit cautious with that. You know, on a good team, he's not a starter yet. Could he develop into that? Maybe. Obviously, the chance is a little bit lower for that to happen. But if he's a depth piece on your team, that's a fantastic pickup as an undrafted guy. So I'm happy with him. Bless Austin, it's funny. Like, I feel like that was the biggest takeaway of the podcast, like, last week, Scott, from people getting tweets about, like, my voice playing in people's heads and they're seeing Bless Austin get beat. And I think he had, what, two or three penalties? He's just not good. Like, I don't know where the hype came from last year. I don't playing backup guys, and he just wasn't very good. He got benched versus the Steelers after his, like, fourth start or whatever. This game, another couple of penalties. The one I believe is a holding call or defensive pass interference. I think it's just defensive pass interference where I think it was Cam Akers who ran like a hitch. Bless Austin's the cloud corner. And then instead of staying over top of Akers, he kind of cheats inside because on the hitch, he plays it well. Like, you know, it's not really hard to play the cloud corner, a hitch route. But his eyes get focused into the backfield. And Cam Akers just simply just turns around and starts running back up the sideline. And because Bless Austin is not playing over top and his eyes are locked into the backfield instead of the guy he's responsible for, he has to hold him to obviously impede him from gaining more ground on him. And then it's a, and then it's a, you know, it's a first down for the Rams. Like, it's really simple things that he's just not good at. He got, you know, again, multiple penalties this game. He didn't get like roasted in coverage that I can remember. I know he got beat for a touchdown as well, actually. He got a holding call on Woods or defensive pass interference on Woods. I forget the touchdown, what he did exactly, but it was not good. I think he didn't get a shuffle. And, oh, yeah, I remember he opened up his hips way too soon and just got abused on the route stem. The guy cut outside and beat him. So beat for a touchdown, multiple holding calls or defensive pass interferences. He's not the answer. Again, he is not a starter next year. He's a guy who will be competing with Arthur Maulet and Lamar Jackson to stay on the roster next year. That's my opinion of Bless Austin. The rest of the secondary, Marcus May, another solid game, obviously had a few tackles in the run game. The one touchdown he did let up, overextended a little bit, didn't love his leverage. He gave up a touchdown on what I call a bump cut to, I believe it was Higby, or I think it was Higby. Which is kind of a hard play to make for Marcus May. So it was a good touchdown given up, but it wasn't brutal in any aspect. It kind of just happens sometimes. Okay, I'm not going to kill him for that. Not all touchdowns given up are the same. And then obviously he had the play that nobody wanted him to make later in the game on Everett, where he plays the route really well. Everett pushes off on Marcus May's upfield shoulder and is tracking the ball into his hands, and Marcus May makes a ridiculous play to get his outside hand up on the ball, pass deflection, obviously great body control, good extension, good tracking of the ball, just an absolutely fantastic play. That was a 4th and 4 where Jared Goff missed the guy open over the middle. And again, I don't know why they're attacking Marcus May instead of the Jets linebackers, because, you know, guys like Hewitt and Lange can really cover apparently. So attack our best guy in the secondary right now. And Marcus May just makes a ton of sense in a game-winning situation. So while it was disappointing for us to see him make that play, obviously great for Marcus May. So another, you know, solid game for Marcus May, solid game for Guidry, solid game for Hall, terrible game for Austin, as I've come to expect from him. Again, I don't want to just act like I'm being unfair to Austin, but it's what I'm seeing. I want to be transparent, so.
Joe, one thing that I was surprised about, and I know you mentioned this before we started recording, is that the Rams didn't challenge the Jets linebackers more. First of all, the edge rushers did nothing, but the inside linebackers really haven't been all that good this year, despite some people conflating the number of tackles somebody gets with good play. I don't understand why the Rams didn't do more to exploit this weakness of the Jets, but they didn't, and that has to be a black mark on Sean McVay's resume.
Yeah, for sure. You're talking, and this is one of the reasons I was very confident in this matchup, was McVay, you know, versus Adam Gase. And, like, the defensive coordinator, too, just, like, in general, that coaching staff that's pretty highly touted, like, how many times are the Jets going to throw it into the flat like and pick up first downs? Like, the Ty Johnson touchdown was a blown defense. Man coverage that they couldn't communicate, you know, simple motion at the snap, which is the way of the NFL this year. Like, look, the Jets use motion, and they actually confuse defenses. Like, novel concept. They actually did it in a game we didn't want them to win. Frank Gore, you know, end of the game, there's two guys wide open in that play. The Rams were in man coverage. They completely blew coverage. Like, you know, hard to even describe. So the defense blew it. McVay, again, like you said, like, you know, against the Jets, like, I know they're a team who is a primary, you know, a lot of these teams, the 49ers, the Rams, the Falcons, you know, when they had Freeman and they had Coleman running the ball, they're teams who like to run, to set up the pass. And they couldn't run early because of the Jets' defensive line and the fact that Cam Akers went out. But listen, bud, like, you got to adjust. Like, you're Sean McVay. Like, you can't just keep running into the strength of the Jets' unit, and they kept doing it. And then, again, they didn't really isolate the linebackers. Like, they just didn't they didn't do what I thought they were going to do. Like, the Jets this year, like, it's been very simple. Like, we've seen them give up so many plays in zone coverage, just run short spacing concepts over the middle and separate the linebackers because the Jets spot drop. And they just didn't do enough of it. And then, like I said, the biggest blemish on him was like third and four. You run a wheel route. Like, I get attacking Hewitt there, but make it attack Hewitt over the middle. Like, make it an easier throw for Goff, who is very overrated in my opinion. I've been saying that since forever. So you do that, and like, okay, it didn't work out. Now attack the Jets linebackers the next play. No, let's run Everett, you know, wherever it was, 30, 40 yards down the field and attack Marcus May, instead of having a bunch of routes over the middle, space and concept mesh, whatever it might have been. Like, they just made it way too difficult at the end. The Rams coaching staff overall just completely blew it again in a situation where you're fighting for the division with the Seahawks to obviously get a higher seed in the playoffs in a competitive NFC, and you lose to the Jets when they're clearly overlooking the Jets. It was just, again, you know, I'm not mad at the players. I'm not mad at Darnold. I'm mad at some of the players and how they came out and spoke to the media about Jets fans that after, which I'm sure you've touched on another podcast. But, you know, I'm more mad at that Sean McVay and Jared Goff. Like, I just kept looking at his dumb face throughout the game, and I was just so angry. Like, they just completely misplayed this game. Absolutely blew it from a coaching standpoint.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Shifting to the offensive side of the ball here, Joe, this was Sam Darnold's best game of the season. Didn't do anything particularly impressive, but didn't make any major mistakes. A lot of checkdowns here. This isn't what you want to see if it's going to be the best of Sam Darnold, but if this could somehow be the worst of Sam Darnold, then you'd be looking at a much better quarterback.
Yeah, this is what we saw more of the first 2 years. Again, it was nothing spectacular. There were some spectacular throws, like obviously the throw where he's rolling out to his right and throws it to Berrios, who's running deep down the right sideline. Like, that throw is elite. Like, it's an elite throw, just simple as that. And we know Darnold has that. The throw to Herndon with bad footwork, where Herndon, I believe, has a linebacker. I think it's a linebacker. It could have been a safety. I'm almost 100% sure it was a linebacker on him, and puts it in only a spot where Herndon can catch it with really, really tight coverage, even with bad footwork. Two, like, elite throws I can think about. The way he escaped the pocket at times. You know, Donald could have had another sack or three this game, but he kept, you know, kind of dodging them. So good job on that, throwing the ball away. You know, scrambling. He was a little bit quicker through his reads this game, which is a positive. Quicker to check it down, like things like that, that were positive. There were also the negative plays. The throw to Herndon deep down the left sideline, he takes an extra hitch, and if he leaves Herndon, it probably could have been a touchdown, but he just waited a split second long, which is a problem in the NFL. Another play where they naked bootleg out to the right side, and Crowder is running over the middle and over route, and nobody picks him up. And Darnold hesitates, again, just a second, but it probably cost the Jets 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, because if he didn't hesitate to throw the ball, Crowder wouldn't have run out of bounds. It's like, it's little things that you want to see more consistency from with Darnold. And those were two plays where it looked like good plays because they were completions. Great. But you want to see them executed better. Like, again, process versus results. So, but overall, like you said, a good game. His best game of the season, in my opinion, as well, especially against the number one defense in the NFL, which clearly played like they were not the number one defense in the NFL with all the blown coverages and things like that. But he was more decisive. He was more accurate for the most part. You know, used his legs. We saw the amazing throws that he can make. Like, again, if Berrios catches that ball, like, that's one of the top throws you're seeing all year from anybody. Definitely a positive game for Sam Darnold, but again, with some lapses in there, and with this being the 15th game out of 17th game, this being the first game, like, okay, you know, pretty solid. Like, you know, if he had a lot more of these games this year, again, Scott, like you said, like a perfect way to word it, like, you know, is this what you want to see from him? No, but if this is what you kind of saw from him, then like, okay, like, if this is what we saw a lot more of Darnold from this year, I'll be like, okay, like, at that point, like, yeah, he didn't take like a forward step, like, it was more of a side step, maybe a small step backwards for him. But if we landed a Pat Fitzgerald or a Matt Campbell, maybe they can turn this guy into something. But the problem is, this is the first one of those games this year, which, again, considering, you know, everything, and that's considering the coaching staff, the talent around him, this is still his first game where I was like, okay, pretty impressed. So it's not enough at this point. I don't think he can save his job, even if the next two games are really, really good for him. I just don't think it's enough, in my opinion. Obviously, that's not my decision. That's Joe Douglas and whoever the head coach is going to be. But overall from this game, you know, I would say it's one of those in a scale to keep him the first one of the season.
Joe, I know you looked at all the tape from this game, so you had to have come away with the same conclusion that I did. The Jets should give Frank Gore a 10-year contract, right?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have a Hall of Fame running back who can run for 2.3 yards per carry. You know, when the offense, and it's funny too, because I actually put up a play, and I'm gonna put up a play of him on my show, of him actually missing a wide open hole. So like the Jets' offensive line is the reason that that these running backs are successful. Like, yeah, you know, Josh Adams is breaking tackles and Ty Johnson is explosive, but like, and there's a reason when those guys play, they put up more than Gore do because they have that athleticism that Gore is clearly lacking at this point. So I don't get why they're still playing him. And I do, because obviously it's Gase is loyal to a fault to the players, you know, to the two or three guys who actually like him in the NFL. So yeah, super lucky to have Gore and his lack of ability to cut and things like that. Obviously, you know, last play of the game, great play by Gore in terms of them winning. Like, you know, great. It wasn't great in terms of, okay, yeah, he ran 5 yards, turned back around on Darnold, and then backpedaled after he caught the ball. But he really quickly realized that it was a blown coverage and threw his hands up where Darnold could not have the opportunity to miss him. So, like, maybe Darnold doesn't see him if he doesn't throw his hands up like he does. So good play by him there. But other than that, like what are we doing here? So, again, just winning a game from a quarterback who will not be here next year, running back getting 23 carries who will not be here next year, coached by a coach who will not be here next year, going against a team who clearly blew it this game, was not the most satisfying win. Like, listen, if this was, you know, hypothetical, you know, if this was James Morgan throwing to Denzel Mims with Ty Johnson and P. Ryan running it with, you know, Hall and Q and Beck and all these players playing well, which a couple of guys did play well, then yeah, more satisfying. But, you know, a good game by Donald Gore and Gase, it's like, you know, it's so unsatisfying. So
good game for Jameson Crowder is a little more satisfying, though. He played very well. And I think that once again, he showed why the Jets need to keep him going forward. Not as many targets for Denzel Mims or Breshad Perriman. So the wide receiving core didn't have a massive day, but one guy that stepped up a little more than normal was Chris Herndon. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's anything close to what Jets fans were hoping for after he had some promising games down the stretch in 2018. But at least he started to play a little bit better in this game. So those were encouraging signs, at least in the passing game.
Yeah, Crowder does his job. He's a really good route runner. He has really good hands for the most part. Can catch balls outside of his frame, which his frame is not very big, so his catch radius isn't big. But overall, pretty good catcher of the ball. Again, his route running, his ability to sit in soft spot ball are all positives. Mims didn't really produce too much. You know, going against guys like Jalen Ramsey on the outside didn't really do that for him. And again, the Jets just taking advantage of just throwing the ball into the flat a ton doesn't obviously provide a lot of opportunity for Perriman and Mims. So that's why I didn't really see them produce. The game plan plus going against a guy like Ramsey. So good job by Crowder. Again, nothing like overly spectacular. Like some of the catches were like kind of expected. Like the Rams defense just didn't play very well. So there's no like plays that really like stood out. Like, wow, that's a wow play from Crowder or a wow play from Herndon. But listen, like Herndon ran some routes that were like decent. Like I'm not going to go crazy on any of the routes he ran, but guess what? He caught the ball this game. Like that's literally what that's my response to it. Like I'm not gonna say, oh, you know, he closed distance on a guy and used the bam step at the top of his route, you know, with a tight break and his stop steps. Like there was nothing really like that in this game that I usually kind of click and go to and talk about. It was all generic type stuff, but he caught the ball when he was called upon, which is more than he's been doing all this year. So maybe he does turn it around. Like maybe the Jets do. You know, should they rely on him as their QB or tight end one next year? Probably not. But listen, like if the Jets sign a Jonnu Smith next year and you have Jonnu Smith as your one and Herndon as your two and Herndon steps up, then great. You have two good tight ends, you know. But a positive game overall from him, from Crowder. So, that's something you could take away from the passing game. Again, nothing spectacular, but nothing bad either. So.
Finally, Joe, the offensive line. I thought the tackles were pretty good. The interior, not so great, partly because it's Elflein and Andrews, so what could you reasonably expect? But again, still significantly better than last year, which isn't saying a lot, but it's something.
Yeah, no, for sure. They, again, the offensive line, like the guys who you want to be playing well are playing well. I know Fant like struggled a game or two before, but this game again played really, really well. For the most part, Becton played really, really well. Some of his blocks were a little bit overhyped. Let's just say that. I've brought up examples of that, like the down block on Donald on the goal line. I'm going to that in my show, but when a guy is like backdooring into the B gap and you catching him when he's not completely firing into your chest and you moving him an inch or two or maybe even a foot, it's not really that impressive. So like there's times Becton is overhyped by fans, but again, I still think he's a top 10 left tackle. Positive game from him. Didn't let up any pressures or sacks that I saw. Fant, another good game. Definitely a really good game from him. Connor McGovern, solid game. And those are the three that you want to be playing well, because those are the three guys who might be here next year. You know, obviously the Jets fans' hope is that we sign a Tooney or a Sheriff, and then we draft the guy, you know, mid to late first round or late first round or early second round or whatever, and then you have a really solid group there. But the guys who struggled, the Andrews and the Elflines, are literally not even starters on the guys who we want to replace. Like we have Lewis and Dan Roden as the starters, and we want them replaced. And we're now looking at their backups who are not playing well. Like it's expected, yes. Josh Andrews and Elfline blocking Aaron Donald is not a good recipe. Like it's obvious. Like who expected that? So those guys played like crap, but that's very, very expected in this game. Nothing earth shattering. Like I said, I don't know if Cam Clark and Adam Gase's wife had a slumber party, let's say. I don't know why he's playing or not playing, but you know, hopefully he does play maybe this game or next game. I doubt it. Hopefully he's a piece in the future, but yeah, the guard struggled, but the three guys who may be here for a while did play well. So that's definitely positive.
I actually heard the reason that Cam Clark isn't playing is because he talked smack to Frank Gore, and you don't mess with Frank Gore on Adam Gase's watch.
Yeah. Gore is again, one of the two or three guys who like Adam Gase in this world. His wife probably doesn't even like him. It's just because he makes money. She'll eventually divorce him after his contract in the NFL run up. And then she'll go and marry some other dude. So I'm sure his kid doesn't like him. So Gore is like the one for one in the world. That's why he's backing him up. So
you hear that, Jets fans? Get your resumes ready. Get your dating profiles updated, because apparently, according to Joe Blewett, Mrs. Gase is going to be on the market soon. Joe Blewett breaking down the film over at JetsXFactor.com with Blewett's Blitz. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. What do you got going on with your film review? I know that you said that you're going to be starting to break down some of the draft prospects, particularly Zach Wilson and Justin Fields, as I said earlier on in the show. What are people going to get when they head over to the YouTube?
Too much. Yeah, it's the grind is coming. I can feel it. The off season is a lot for me. So obviously, if the Jets do not finish at one, which if you had to bet a lot on this, but which by the way, just a quick tidbit, I put 500 on the Bears this week, because listen, the Bears win, I win a couple hundred. If they lose, I'm happy. So I'm hedging my bets this weekend. So hopefully we do land Lawrence. I could care less about $500 at this point as compared to Lawrence. So hopefully we land him. But if not, again, I'm going to have reviews of Wilson and Fields, which are easily going to be 100-plus plays at the minimum. So those are coming. Again, broadcast angle, the hype, all this stuff. Like, let's look into the translatable stuff. Like, just if you're a fan of the film show, like, you know how I talk about a lot of perceptions and misconceptions and stuff like that that are out there, that people hype up plays that shouldn't be, et cetera. So I'm going to dive into a lot of that stuff. And then obviously the Jets getting a new coach, whoever that's going to be, break down their offense, the defensive coordinator's defense. I'll most likely, just in case the Jets do trade down a couple spots, which I would be severely pissed, but I'll most likely do a Jamar Chase review, Penny Sewell review. So a massive amount coming. That's not even counting the players of Jets draft, you know, with the second first pick, the second pick, the third, the two third round picks, the fourth pick, the free agents the Jets signed. So every player, pretty much every player who comes on the Jets roster, you're going to have breakdowns of, whether they be 150 plus plays or, you know, a quick 20 minute breakdown on my YouTube show, because the guy is an undrafted guy. So there is so much coming that my head's already starting to spin a little bit. I'm trying to jump ahead and get ahead of the curve here, breaking down Wilson literally as soon as we hang up. So
Make sure that you're following Joe on Twitter at JoeRB31. And of course, subscribe to his YouTube channel, which you can get access to at JetsXFactor.com if you subscribe. And as Joe said, there's so much over there that it might end up giving you a head injury when you watch it all. But at least it'll be your own fault. If it's somebody else's fault, it could be a life-changing event. And when that happens, you want to make sure you have a strong legal team fighting for you to ensure that you receive full compensation for your injuries. You want to be able to call your legal team whenever you want. You don't want your file to be on a shelf with hundreds of others, and you don't want your lawyers to be afraid to go to court. Here's what you do want. The legal team at Faruqi & Faruqi, they give every client their personal cell phone number to call 24/7. They limit the number of clients they represent at one time. They have a long track record of taking on insurance companies, corporations, and the government in court, and best of all, a long track record of winning. Prior results do not guarantee similar outcomes. Learn more about them at nylegalteam.com. That's nylegalteam.com. And learn more about Joe Blewett at jetsxfactor.com and his show, Blewett's Blitz. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.